Day 6023. Even before I open my eyes, I like Vic. Biologically female, gendered male, living within the definition of his own truth, just like me. He knows who he wants to be. Most people our age don't have to do that. They stay within the realm of the easy. If you want to live within the definition of your own truth, you have to choose to go through the initially painful and ultimately comforting process of finding it. It's supposed to be a busy day for Vic. There's a history test and a math test. There's band practice, which is the thing he looks forward to the most in the day. There's a date with a girl named Dawn. I get up, I get dressed. I get my keys and get in my car. But when I get to the place where I should turn off for school, I keep driving. It's just over a 3-hour drive to Rhiannon. I've emailed to let her know Vic and I are coming. I didn't give her time to reply or to say no. On the drive, I access pieces of Vic's history. There are few things harder than being born into the wrong body. I had to deal with it a lot when I was growing up, but only for a day. Before I became so adaptable, so acquiescent to the way my life worked, I would resist some of the transitions. I loved having long hair and would resent it when I woke up to find my long hair was gone. There were days I felt like a girl and days I felt like a boy, and those days wouldn't always correspond with the body I was in. I still believed everyone when they said I had to be one or the other. Nobody was telling me a different story, and I was too young to think for myself. I had yet to learn that when it came to gender, I was both and neither. It is an awful thing to be betrayed by your body, and it's lonely because you feel you can't talk about it. You feel it's something between you and the body. You feel it's a battle you will never win, and yet you fight it day after day, and it wears you down. Even if you try to ignore it, the energy it takes to ignore it will exhaust you. Vic was lucky in the parents he was given. They didn't care if he wanted to wear jeans instead of skirts or play with trucks instead of dolls. It was only as he grew older, into his teens, that it gave them some pause. They knew that their daughter liked girls, but it took a while for him to articulate, even to himself, that he liked them as a boy. That he was meant to be a boy, or at least to live as a boy, to live in the blur between a boyish girl and a girlish boy. His father, a quiet man, understood and supported him in a quiet way. His mother took it harder. She respected Vic's desire to be who he needed to be, but at the same time had a difficult time giving up the fact of having a daughter for the fact of having a son. Some of Vic's friends understood, even at 13 and 14. Others were freaked out, the girls more than the boys. To the boys, Vic had always been the tag-along, the non-sexual friend. This didn't change that. Dawn was always there in the background. They had gone to school together since kindergarten, friendly without ever really becoming friends. When they got to high school, Vic was hanging out with the kids who furiously scribbled poems into their notebooks and let them lie there, while Dawn was with the kids who would submit their poems to the literary magazine the minute they were finished. The public girl, running for class treasurer and joining the debate club, and the private boy, the sidekick on 7-Eleven runs. Vic never would have noticed Dawn, never would have thought it was a possibility, if Dawn hadn't noticed him first. But Dawn did notice him. He was the corner that her eye always strayed toward. When she closed her eyes to go to sleep, it was thoughts of him that would lead her into her dreams. She had no idea what she was attracted to, the boyish girl, the girlish boy, and eventually she decided it didn't really matter. She was attracted to Vic, and Vic had no idea she existed. Not in that way. Finally, as Dawn would later recount to Vic, it became unbearable. They had plenty of mutual friends who could have done reconnaissance, but Dawn felt that if she was going to risk it, she was going to risk it firsthand. So one day, when she saw Vic piling in with some of the other guys for a 7-Eleven run, she jumped into her car and followed them. As she'd hoped, Vic decided to hang out in front while his friends played in the aisles. Dawn walked over and said hello. Vic didn't understand at first why Dawn was talking to him, or why she seemed so nervous. But then he slowly realized what was happening, and that he wanted it to happen too. When the chime of the front door marked his friend's exit, he waved them off and stayed with Dawn, who didn't even remember to pretend she needed something from the store. Dawn would have talked there for hours. It was Vic who suggested they go get coffee, and it all went from there. There had been ups and downs since, but the heart of it remained. When Dawn looked at Vic, she saw Vic exactly as he wanted to be seen. Or as Vic's parents couldn't help seeing who he used to be, and so many friends and strangers couldn't help seeing who he didn't want to be anymore. Dawn only saw him. Call it a blur if you want, but Dawn didn't see a blur. She saw a very distinct, very clear person. As I sift through these memories, as I put together this story, I feel such gratitude and such longing, not Vic's, but my own. This is what I want from Rhiannon. This is what I want to give Rhiannon. But how can I make her look past the blur? If I'm a body she'll never really see, in a life she'll never really be able to hold.